And now, a personal favourite of mine, stay right here for another instalment from Documentally.
It's the 25th of June 2019 and the 12th year around the grave of Eric Arthur Blair, aka George Orwell. And in attendance on this very wet but bright day is...
Christian Hembley.
Wojtek Lubowiecki.
Adam Bradley.
Clelo.
David Charles.
And myself, Christian Payne. Normally we will discuss a little bit about the state of the world, data, surveillance, when will it ever not be about data, surveillance, and it used to be CCTV, the least of our worries, really. Maybe this year it should be Google is allegedly about to reach quantum supremacy. Adam, a person who has his own supercomputer, a Cray, no doubt, built from not from bits.
No, it was came from Swansea University.
Yeah, and can you explain quantum supremacy to those that may not be fully clued up?
To be honest, I'm still not convinced that anyone will ever build a quantum computer in our lifetime. I think that the definition of it is too fluffy, and no one except a quantum physicist has ever been able to explain it to me in any reasonable way, even people who claim to work on them.
That's interesting, because a lot of the articles that I read in the last couple of days were saying they're thinking that in 3 months' time, Google will have quantum supremacy. What does that mean?
Well, I mean...
if it's true.
Define what quantum computing is and what it's useful for. Define me a use case and then show me how you can... Okay,
so take, for example, some of the encryption technology that we've had. It used to take a trillion years, and now it can take 3 years. Is it AES?
Sure, I mean, that's great. Prove it.
I thought it had been proven.
I've not seen any output of any study that shows this actually works.
It's all so I see. This is fake news leaking in again. So the acceleration in the processing power that they're talking, it's in magnitudal.
It's very different. You can't really compare it. So you can't easily compare a modern CPU to a quantum computer because it works in entirely different ways. Modern CPU is obviously very linear, and a quantum computer is... It has a quantum effect, right?
So on a base level, a modern CPU works in noughts and ones, and we're limited by the physicality and the physics behind silicon. We can only go so small. We've found that with some of these quantum chips, whatever they're calling them, we can actually go way, way bigger because noughts are ones and are both noughts and ones at the same time. Hello, we have another person joining the circle. Currently recording in binaural, Tony Gosling.
Lovely weather for the time of year.
Pleased to meet you. Yeah, and have you driven over from Bristol?
Further than that.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
This is the 12th year. I think it's been 3 years since you popped up. We're talking about quantum computing in as simple as we can. So, who is thinking that this kind of technology should be opened up and not be held behind the doors, for example, of, say, Google?
I mean, the problem you've got is no one understands it. It's like you're throwing people into a pit. I know a guy who recently said he got access to a quantum computer for half an hour for a kids' coding club. I'm sorry, that's great, but what are you going to do with it? You know, I mean, if I don't understand it fully, I don't see that 11-year-olds are going to. I could be wrong. I'm happy to be proven wrong by that. But, I mean, realistically... Find me somebody who actually understands how it works.
So if I was to go all sci-fi on you, and anybody else chip in should you want to, as I was reading it half awake on my phone that shouldn't have been in the bedroom, contemplating that at this acceleration of computational power, this thing is going to become self-aware and decide that humans, in some ways quite rightly so, are a bit of a scourge and need to be removed from the planet.
I mean, if you're segueing into AI, I mean, the way AI is trained these days and the way it's all written with kill switches and stuff is very specific to not allow that use case, right? So you always build an AI around, obviously, a data set. You always have a point system. So the favourite example of this is there was an AI that played Tetris, right? And they taught it not to lose the game. So it figured out it could just pause the game, it would never lose.
Right. Oh, interesting.
So what you do instead is you give it points. You go, if you get to this thing, I will give you effectively like a cookie, even though it doesn't know what that is or care. That's what it's programmed to want, right? So when it starts going off track and doing things you don't want it to, you stop giving it cookies. and then when it starts doing things you think are appropriate, you give it cookies, right? So if it starts going, oh, humans are bad, kill the humans, you stop giving it cookies, and it will track back.
For someone who has his own supercomputer, I thought you'd be more anthropomorphic over this.
To be honest, my life is now trains, so...
Oh, fair enough. I'm not sure if I should take that as a good or a bad thing.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. So what's your thoughts at the moment around civil liberties and your practices online? You have a smartphone, David, Charles,
correct, yeah.
But you also have a dumb phone.
I do, yeah, although I haven't used it for a month or so because it's basically hardly usable. But they are bringing out a new model in very soon.
Already?
Weeks. Yeah.
Well, so what was your reasoning behind a phone which didn't bother you? It's purely that?
Yeah, basically, because I work, I'm a writer, so my most valuable time that I can spend is as distraction-free as possible and as stress-free as possible. And I just find that with a smartphone, you get so much distraction that I can't use willpower. Like, I don't have enough. I don't think anyone has enough. And what's been interesting is, noticing my own behaviour change over the course of... I've had a smartphone on and off for 3 years now. And I track all my usage using Rescue Time. And I can see when I'm using it more and when I'm using it less. And the trend is more. Except when I've had this punked phone, which adds an extra step between getting online with my smartphone.
That step being frustration.
Yeah, that step mostly being frustration. But funnily enough, that with the punked, so it's basically can do a 4G hotspot, which is excellent. So that was working beautifully. It was more the, like, using it as a phone that wasn't really working, like dropped calls and things like that. Just a little bit clunky. But anyway, and the battery life was shocking.
Apparently that's been fixed with a firmware update that I've yet to download. So.
Apparently, yeah.
Yes, I mean, there is an argument to getting just a 30-quid Nokia that only has snakes on, because you get bored of that pretty quickly.
Well, annoyingly, there is a Nokia that's only released in India and China, those markets, that can do 4G hotspots as well. Just like a classic 3210-shaped bar kind of thing.
Be doing a bit of Googling later. Somebody must be shipping them over in a
false
bottom suitcase.
I looked about a year ago before I found out about the punked and your intervention. But yeah, it seems not. And then, do you want to be the first person to take a risk on a, like they're only 30 quid or something, but the shipping's about 20 quid as well.
Fair enough.
To take a punt and then for something to turn up and unfortunately you don't speak Hindi or Chinese.
Yeah, and the keyboard. Just... I've got an Arabic Nokia, which is great, but I don't know what buttons I'm pressing.
Yeah.
Chip in?
Yep.
You're talking about having a sort of basically just a phone and a smartphone, a separate thing.
Yeah.
There's also having no phone, which is becoming, I think, more attractive. I think everybody who's in any way aware and active politically, and particularly in the media, or is through, you know, whatever, direct action, that sort of thing, you need to understand exactly where you are on that scale of how spyable on you are. And I think there's more and more people who are now thinking, well, actually, maybe I'll just ditch this thing. The reason I say that is because I've noticed a massive, massive change. It's so horrid hearing you saying, oh, I'll Google this, like everyone is supposed to, you know, oh, I'm going to use my Hoover, or, you know, so... I've noticed so much change in the algorithms. They're now identifying people who are producing powerful news content like me, and I'm going from something like 25, 30,000 hits for an average, almost nothing, down to 300, 400, 1,000. People are just not seeing my stuff, even though it's what they're looking for.
That shadow banning.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just on YouTube. So we're on Twitter... For example, they got rid of the connection between Twitter and Facebook as well. Mm-hmm. So I remember at this little gathering a few years ago, we were talking about how, oh, you know, you tweet something and then it sort of cascades down into every other system. Well, it doesn't. No. All these systems that social media is designed to make, basically get round the rubbish in the mass media, are now slowly being switched off one by one, boom, boom, boom. And so I think maybe it's time to just ditch the old smartphone and just go back to the real world and face-to-face.
You can't get as much reach as... I mean, I would argue that it's about pulling back from the big five and the platforms which are... I mean, look what's happening at the moment. There's Nick Clegg is just about to go into talks about how to police Facebook content and, I guess, let's just call it censorship, and how to decide what is right to be on Facebook or what isn't right on Facebook. We have got ourselves into this situation. Not me personally. You know, when I say Google, what I actually mean is Start Page or DuckDuckGo. It may take a little bit longer to get a result, but I use as many platforms that aren't going to scrape my data as much as possible. But when it comes to, I mean, you know, I've just uploaded a YouTube video. I've never had advertisement on my channel. For me, it's an archival kind of platform so that I don't lose the video should I lose my phone on the way home. But I loathe that we don't have the Viddlers and we still have Vimeo, but that we don't choose en masse to be hanging out in places which I think are better for us, if anything, other than health-wise. So we're not... Let me go to Christian, because I wanted to go to you a moment ago.
Before I get off YouTube, just really quickly, my video, what the BBC won't tell you about Brexit, was just a hardly thought about 20-minute conversation I had on Spanish radio about the... basically, it was a review of a book by a Canadian journalist, Paul Manning, and his book was Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. Now, I never even mentioned the title of the book in it, but it was all about the cartels of Europe, the idea that the fascist occupation of Europe was based on cartels, and it just went crazy. It's now over 1.75 million hits, and at about 3 or 4 months after that hit the million, I got demonetized completely. And we are really coming, Christian, to a time where all the great advantages of the internet, the big, you know, social media stuff, is really not going to be working for anybody anymore. And slowly but surely we're being switched off. So we really have to be, you know, like, aware that maybe we switched the whole lot off.
So what about federated?
I'm obviously not at that stage.
What about the federated platforms, the decentralised networks? What about the mastodons? Riot?
We don't know where we're going. These people have taken up our lives. I remember one of the girl volunteers at our radio station said, "But Facebook has my life. What are they going to do with it? I don't know what they're going to do with it." And there was this sort of, you know, they have got us.
But this is good, isn't it? People actually finally realising.
But most people will accept the trade-off, right? So most people will go, yeah, okay, they got all my data, but I get to see my friend's cool baby photos on Facebook, so do I really care anymore? And the answer to most people is frankly no, because what's the risk to most people? Right? Most people live regular lives, they don't really care, that doesn't really matter to them. All they want to do is go to work, drive their car, go home, have a hot meal, watch some TV, have a beer and chill out. If Facebook has your data, why do you care? Most people don't care.
Should they?
Yes. Well, that's up to them, really.
Yes. I'm going to start putting my foil hat on and preaching about it. We're supercomputers not a million miles off in terms of computing power. The ability for control to flick the switch and say, we know where you go, what you do, based on your habits, your health insurance is going up, we're going to deny healthcare for people with type 2 diabetes because you're fat, overweight, and you put yourself there.
I mean, this is happening now with Trump's administration using phone tracking to find illegal immigrants.
Yep, and it's not just phone tracking. Anyone else see the thing around it hit the press and then dropped really quickly? Smart TVs listening. The Android ecosystem, I'm not dissing on it, simply we know that there's plenty of malware in there. We know there's lots of backdoors for people to be getting in and doing all sorts of things. And the minute it's there, people are going to be using it.
Now, you work in technology and systems. This isn't just stuff you've read off the, you know, one forum without any journalistic backbone.
Yep.
You've decided to take a step back from a lot of technology, yet you still wear...
Just.
The Apple Watch.
Yeah, just.
And as a very early adopter of this technology, I remember we both kind of got the Apple Watch at the same time, and I immediately started getting angry at it because, you know, it tethered me to the mains every day and it told me about stuff because I wasn't as, what's a better word for anal, as you about locking down the notifications, which you've done to an extent now. It's almost just a watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I say nearly not wearing it, and here's, I've got to put some trust and faith in somebody, and there's an organisation. Yes, I trust Apple at this stage. I've already had conversations with friends around. But what happens when they're not run by the current organisation?
Could they not just be the best at keeping secrets?
Yeah, and let's hope that that's where they're striving to get to. But
oh, you mean our secrets? I'm talking about their secrets of their own potential agenda.
Either, either. And those questions are always going through my mind. But there's still the idealist in me that's saying, actually, the ability to track health data could utterly revolutionise us. The interesting part is I don't know that necessarily living longer is the answer for our beautiful planet, unfortunately.
What's interesting to me about the arguments about whether smartphones are stealing our data or whatever is, like you say, that's something that people don't care about. What's interesting to me is my life is better when I don't have a smartphone.
Yeah.
So it's not about whether someone's got my data, which ultimately doesn't really have a face. I've never knowingly had a problem.
Is it better? What makes it, what's
a lot less stressful.
Right.
For a couple of years now, I've not read the news at all, which was something that, as a matter of course, comes into people's news feed, understandably enough, which is very unstressful.
Mm. How do you manage that and be a writer? I mean, you've got 60.
Without the news, I stress.
If you've got 60,000 words. Ready to become a book on refugees, for example. It's just your perspective, or do you bounce off?
Well, when I say the news, I mean I don't, as a matter of course, scroll through headlines. I don't, as a matter of course, get sent in social media because I don't have
no,
any.
No, I agree with that personally. Kind of, not
but
the
if I'm researching a particular story, then, yeah, obviously I can use DuckDuckGo and find information and news stories on those things, but in the main my writing on refugees and migration is in a place in Calais or Greece or wherever, speaking to people, and once you're in a particular sort of interest group, for want of a better word, then you find out from them where the best sources of information are.
Yeah, and that's what you mentioned the headlines, and it's interesting how, you know, many being algorithmically generated. And with A/B testing, it will select the most attractive headline depending on what particular group it's being fed into, how many people click at one particular time, then the headline will immediately change on a geographic level as well. So there's all kinds of weird stuff going on, which I think will only get, should I say, worse or more interesting when supercomputers really kick in.
Google and the Press Association. Loads of money going from Google to the Press Association. They're really starting to get, I mean, basic stuff like sports reports, all just automatically generated. Mm. Someone will just proofread it. Boom,
yeah,
cut off it goes.
NLP has grown massively over the last 5 years.
That's neuro-linguistic programming.
Natural language processing.
Oh, okay.
No, different. The other NLP.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The one that Jeremy Hunt doesn't use.
So, I mean, now computers are not only reading and interpreting articles, but they can write their own, and we're seeing it growing even more.
In the style of any writer you want, if you feed them enough.
I can't wait to retire.
Especially with some of the voice generation now as well, and some of the video editing capabilities of some AI platforms, you can make people look like they're saying all sorts of things on video and make it appear like they've actually said that and been there, when in reality they've said something completely different.
Like a terrorist, for example.
Yeah.
I don't think taking a step back and leaving these places is going to help, because we'll become dumber, won't we? We'll become less informed, we'll become easier to manipulate.
You might be less informed, but then you have to question what you're being informed about. I mean,
This is what I don't get. I've always questioned, I've always said, thank God for blogging initially, because blogging makes me question absolutely everything I read. And then it made me question the headlines, then it made me question the nationals, and I suddenly realised we should all have been doing this forever.
But the more you question it, the more you get down a rabbit hole, and that's also quite dangerous, because then you become so detached from society that you no longer have an influence over society. And the more you detach yourself and the more obscure you become in what you write or what you produce, the less the algorithms will pick up on you, and the further away you'll be pushed. And in the end, you'll have no readership and no one will know. And the people that do know, you talk about decentralised platforms and moving to those. Again, people like us might care and might be interested, but the average person just wants to go home and watch Netflix.
But
they're not interested.
The mass media is moving away from reality, not the bloggers. The bloggers are the only contact with reality. humanity, really.
Sure, but then let's say you're the average person in the street. Are you going to go and click on a random blog you don't know the person who's writing it or have any reference to? Are you going to read BBC News?
Maybe you might chat to someone who reads blogs down the pub. So, I mean, I think reality does still matter.
Yeah, but then you've got the problem with the man down the pub told me, and then that's if anything you need to question, it's...
I mean, we talk about fake news. Anyone can write anything they want on the internet and publish it, right? It's how do you reference the sources?
Well, the BBC
no sources
can publish anything they want.
And,
the,
that's what I'm saying.
And who is using sources
saying.
Nowadays? Exactly. And then who actually goes and checks those sources? You come from an academic background, boy, Jack. What would Orwell have made of all of this right now?
That's exactly what I was thinking about, and
I know.
I will be wearing my sort of as they call it, Eastern European hat, incorrectly talking about Poland, so Central European hat, and I'm, you know, I remember the times before the 1989 when the whole idea of having access to satellite TV and information coming from the other side of the Iron Curtain was so exciting, because we used to live, you know, behind these walls of information, of anything else, of political control, etc. And we were sort of dreaming of that access to that information, which nowadays is for all to have. And so this is amazing, and it's... you know, we were full of optimism at that time, and today I feel it's more like the weather, you know, rather miserable, although it's clearing up at the moment. and what worries me, you know, looking at that from that perspective, is the compartmentalization of the internet. I mean, the fact that the Chinese have their own internet, that the Russians are thinking about building the same firewalls, and that the companies are involved, but I'm less concerned about the commercial power that they were going to use to sell their products. I'm more concerned by the fact that they will gain more political power and more political influence. So that's what worries me. I think as in 1989, you know, the walls started to come down. Now they're sort of reappearing and, you know, all over the place, and that's what worries me.
So, can I go around everybody for one piece of either advice or a tip or a feeling on how we can deliver some first aid on this? Or what best... I mean, if I say I think we need to be using more open web systems, we need to be using more open source software, we need to be using encryption that has been vetted. I really enjoy the fact that in the last few years I have pulled back into conversational spaces which... don't see any advertisement, are completely, as far as I know, if I can trust the device and my threat level, I believe, is low enough for me not to worry about everything being scraped on point of entry, but it semi-private, let's say, conversations happening. And if it wasn't for me having my phone out right now, which is on airplane mode as I record this, and will be public, meetings like this, I've had more physical meetings in the last few years because I just want to get together face to face. I think all of this is healthier, not only for me, but I think for society. Anybody else want to add anything?
Books. Stop reading short form stuff that's of the moment and read more long form books. Loads of them. Keep reading. Books.
And you can't do that if you've got your face plugged into the internet all day, every day. You have to take a step back.
No, exactly. Chill out. Switch off. Read books.
That's on my list of five or three, if I'm being realistic, things I have to do every day is read a bit of a book. Mm. I can't read a whole one, obviously.
Keeps us clever.
That would be make me smart.
Keeps us clever. One of the things that's, we were just speaking about going off and the algorithms pushing one way, and I'm... one of the things I miss about the old internet, if that's a term, is that it was more of a wild, wild west in terms of just finding all kind of weird and wacky stuff. And yeah, you had to be careful about what you read, but you were able to find surprises. And I think people just want to go scroll on their Facebook and not actually come outside of Facebook to do anything. So if you were a blogger, I'm not going to go look for your blog. Mm-hmm. Even if it comes on Facebook, I'll see the headline, but I'm not going to click the link and go. So I guess I encourage people to, however you go about finding more weird There's tons of stuff out there.
This is a really good point, not wanting to turn this into an advertisement for, you know, my newsletter, but it really does make me go outside of my spaces, finding, curating and discovering stuff to throw into stuff like that. And that's why I subscribe to so many other newsletters as well. So
yeah, same. I'm big into the newsletter bit.
Think about spiritual stuff. Look at the spiritual, because that's one part of our society which has gone over the last 30, 40 years. Spiritual isn't happening. Everything's secular. And if you have a look at the way that most of the bad people in the world are operating, they're using religion, they're using the, you know, the traditions of faith, mostly monotheistic faiths, and of course the Hindus and all that sort of stuff, Buddhists, and they're twisting it. So spend a bit of time and find out what's really going on with that.
For me, it's being careful of the trade-off. So if you're willing to share health data because you think it's cool to have a nice graph of your health data, that's great. But as Christian said earlier, think about how that can be used in 20 or 30 years' time to track your health usage and whether or not to provide you with health insurance or indeed cover through the government. And think about how you share your data online and what you do with that. And if you don't trust your device and don't trust what you're doing, ask yourself why you don't trust it and if it's worth trusting it for what you want out of it.
Well, I like using social media. I love Twitter, and I think I'll keep on using it. And sort of my piece of advice is, if you are into social media channels, use them wisely. Just be more aware of what you're putting out there and what potential consequences of doing that might be for you and the family or whatever. So I wouldn't cut off you know, all these links myself totally, but I think I absolutely agree that, you know, face to face contacts are so important, and I think we probably collectively need to change the culture in this country, which makes it so difficult and awkward to have a conversation with a stranger or with your neighbour. So maybe talk to your neighbours more. That's the starting point.
Get up north more.
Reflect on your actions and take some responsibility and thoughts going forward. I hear a lot of people talking about how the kids are addicted to their phones and the dopamine generation, but actually we're the dopamine generation. We're just taking forward and having children that are being shown and role modelled what addicted dopamine addicts are. And they still have an opportunity through our role modelling and actions.
Thank you very much. As ever, it's always fascinating to have such an eclectic mix of people and backgrounds around the grave. I will sign off by saying happy birthday, Eric Arthur Blair, aka George Orwell. Rest in peace, or whatever you do on the other side there. It's got to be easier than back here right now.
Happy birthday. Documentally.